Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to an off-season edition of The Teardown. My name is Jeff Gluck, and I'm along with my coworker, Jordan Bianchi. We are motorsports writers for The Athletic, and we are 1 week removed from the conclusion of the NASCAR season. 1 week ago tonight, Jordan, as we were recording this, we were standing on the racetrack, the backstretch at Phoenix, interviewing Kyle Larson. And now all of a sudden we're back and separated by Zoom, separated
by... I miss you, buddy.
You do? I don't think you do.
You miss me?
No, we just saw each other. Like, we literally just saw each other. Like, you haven't given me enough time to miss you yet, Jordan.
Wow. So glad you're my friend.
What's the threshold for missing someone? Isn't it like, if you saw someone yesterday, you wouldn't say, I missed them, right?
Well, if you care about them, you do. Maybe you like spending time with them all the time. So you miss if you leave out of town for a day and you don't miss your wife and kid?
That's my wife and kids, not my coworker, Jordan Bianchi.
I always thought we were right there.
This is a bad news for Jordan. No,
that's depressing. That's great.
Just give me some time, Jordan. Give me some time to miss everybody. I feel like I just saw everybody. Season just wrapped up, and it's been nonstop, really, NASCAR news. Everything, one thing after another. Kyle Larson goes to the Coliseum for a promo event, and there's just news.
Crew chiefs everywhere.
Like, yep. I mean, and it'll continue like that, you know?
Yeah.
Rides being announced and charters and all that stuff.
Two-day test this week at Charlotte Motor Speedway, which I think is actually pretty big. And I'm very curious to see how that goes.
And you missed NASCAR enough already that you're excited about going.
I'm actually excited by this because I'm really curious by this test, which is really a weird thing to say. But we've seen how this car does on a road course. There's no surprises. And the feedback on the road course seems pretty encouraging. But let's be candid, the conversations we've had with people about this car on ovals is much different, and there's not a lot of optimism right now. And spending 2 days with really kind of almost a full field or thereabouts, this is going to be telling to see where things are at and what progress has been made and what progress still needs to be made.
Well, I would just encourage everybody not to read too much into a test, because I learned that lesson, 2018, I guess, when they were unveiling this package or whatever at Las Vegas. And I thought, based on the Las Vegas, you know, simulated race or whatever, that it was going to be a certain way, and it wasn't. And
I remember your enthusiasm for that. I remember how excited you were. Like, your video was great. And I just remember the enthusiasm that emanated from you about this, like, this is going to be great and awesome. And, you know, races on intermediate tracks are going to be all a game changer. And this is what NASCAR needs. And now, Jeff, what is your tune about this package on mile and a half racetracks?
Well, more important, let's talk about the fans' tune, because that's what we're going to get into today. And that is the Was It a Good Race poll data. Now, of course, each week, every Monday morning or whatever the morning is after the race, if it was postponed or whatever, I never ask it the day of, because I want everybody to sleep on it. For the last 6 years now, almost every week, there's been some exceptions with, it's like, you know, whether it's a scary incident or something like that, where it's not appropriate to ask people whether it was a good race or whatever the case may be. But for the most part, every race for the last 6 years, I've asked people whether it was a good race. Some people like this poll, some people don't like this poll, but it gives you sort of a feel for overall, what are the best races. Now, of course, you know, big caveat here, this is a Twitter poll. It's not scientific. So there's always a danger into reading too much into it. Of course, it can be affected by, you know, maybe it was a good finish, or maybe it was a controversial finish, or maybe people didn't like the driver, or maybe people don't like the package, as we found out this year with some of the results. But for the most part, I think maybe that affects it, could be a big margin of error, 5 to 10%. But I think a lot of times it's fairly in tune with what I saw, at least the Twitter sentiment was. And obviously, we're guessing, right? So we guess before we even do the poll each night. And a lot of times we're fairly close. So that said, I don't think it's that far off from what the reality is. But I'm not going to claim that it's exact numbers, like if it would have been done by a professional polling firm. You know what I'm saying?
I think that's important caveats. I think you make a good point of how this, you know, you can criticize the poll and you can say it's Twitter and there's a small sample size and whatnot. But when you look at the results, I think it is indicative of the overall sentiment, good and bad, of where some races are at in terms of what tracks they're at, what the package is. I think there is something to glean from this. And I'm curious to have this discussion with you. Looking at the numbers when you sent them over today, I was taken back, and we're going to get into it some more, but there were some races that made the good list that I was a little surprised at, and there were some races that made the bad list. I'm like, okay, you know, I'd probably thrown that one out, or weather impacted one of the races significantly. And I was like, really, that really seemed almost unfair in some respects. So there's a lot to discern here in the information, but I think it's going to be interesting to see how people interpret this. But I personally think there is something to learn from this.
So I want to start with, we're going to get into the top 10 best and worst races as voted on by the poll, but I want to start with this guy, Ron H456. He's on Twitter and he's often quite grumpy with me. I'm not even sure he likes me at all, but
he doesn't like you. Don't answer that question.
Yeah, plenty of people. But this guy, sometimes he angry tweets me a lot, but he also is some sort of like data analyst or data scientist or something. And he takes the good race poll data and he pumps it into a bunch of charts and makes it sortable. He has one of those Tableau websites and it's a very long link, so I can't read the whole thing to you here. But if you go to his Twitter page, Ron456, you could probably find it if you want to dive more into it. But I pulled some of the data of that he's crunched from these Was It a Good Race poll numbers. So the first thing is, there's been six seasons now of the poll, right? And the number one year of the most of, in terms of average weekly poll yes percentage, was this season, 70.8%. And that beats last year, which was 67.5%. That was number two. So Fox went into this year proclaiming it best season ever. I'm not sure it lived up to best season ever, but at least since the poll has been around, Jordan, the fans, I mean, whether you knowingly or not, voted this way, you voted that it's the best season of the last 6 years. Does that resonate with you? Does that sound accurate to you?
It does. And it's something I have said on this podcast really throughout the year. I thought the racing was really good this year. At times it was exceptional, and it was exceptional at a lot of racetracks where maybe it wasn't great. You know, Atlanta had a good race. Pocono, we're going to dive more into that later. But I'm not surprised to see that this number is higher. And I think it's also important to note, and this is another point I'm going to make later, but I think it's reflective of the schedule changes that NASCAR has made, where you're seeing racetracks that don't put on good races being removed. You know, there was no Michigan, no Chicago, no Kentucky.
One Michigan.
What was that?
There was one Michigan, but not two.
Yeah, one Michigan, not two. You know, one Dover race, Kentucky, you had that summer stretch, you know, where, and I've said this before, you had for a long time, there was that summer stretch of 6-7 races where it just felt like this is doldrums. You know, this is not the best. And this is not the best product, the best way for NASCAR to showcase its product. And you've gotten rid of some of those tracks and you've seen a change. And I think when you add more racetracks that put on a better show, you're going to get better results. And that's indicative. And I think that's kudos to NASCAR for realizing it. We've got to do something to the schedule and change it up. And the results bear that out.
So the worst year since it's been, the poll began, was 2019, which seems fairly obvious to me because that was the year where they did not have a separate short track package. It was all the same package. And of course, as we know, a 550 horsepower package on short tracks was not good. It ruined the short tracks for that season, essentially. And they were compelled to make a change on that. And since they did, the last two seasons have been better. Now, let's dive into the reason why this is happening. And it's not going to, I'll tell you right now, if you're a 750 truther, this is not going to necessarily make you happy. Parts will, parts won't, but let's break down the numbers. This is again, Ron H 456 crunch these numbers. So by package this season, we're talking about 2021 only by package, the low downforce 750 track ovals, which is essentially the short tracks, 1 mile or less, 76.6% yes percentage. That's obviously the highest. The road courses, also 750 package, but separated for these purposes, 74%. The super speedways, for the most part, have had a very good package. They made a tweak to it this year, but still pretty good racing, 72.7. Now you drop down to the 550 package, which are essentially all the intermediate tracks except for Darlington and Nashville this year. And that ends up with a 62.8%. Okay, so clearly you'd look at those numbers on the surface and say, well, duh, 750 beats 550. But here's the wrinkle, my friends. When you go back to the intermediate track numbers by year, people like this package more, the 550 package more, than they did in the previous package. So so this year, like last year, for instance, it got, the 550 races got a 71.1. No, sorry, that was 2019, because that included the short track as well. Last year was 64%. So now this year it dropped a little, because if you separate Darlington and Nashville out, that's 80.2. And the other intermediate tracks alone are 57.7. But still, you go back to 2017, which was the lowest, and that's 55.9. So I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you, but the bottom line is, if you take just the intermediate tracks and compare them to just the intermediate tracks before they had lower horsepower and high downforce, the numbers are actually higher now. So NASCAR actually made these numbers go up with the rules package. I know it's a long-winded explanation, but that's what the numbers are saying with the good, was it a good race poll? And that made the season go up overall, because it brought down some of the bad races. Your reaction, Jordan?
I look at these numbers and I say, it's not so much about the package. It's about the racetracks. And you look at the tracks where the racing wasn't very good, there's a common theme. It's mile and a half intermediate racetracks. Those have long been the bane of NASCAR's existence. There's been long too many of them on the schedule. They are now starting to get weeded out, but there are still a number of them on the schedule. And if you look at the number of races where the racing, where people voted against the racing, I don't think they're voting because of the package. I think they're voting because they didn't like the racing. You know, it could have been a 750 package on that mile and a half racetrack, but if it's not good, people aren't going to vote for it. That to me is my biggest takeaway, where you can talk about the good and the bad of this package, and we have done that ad nauseum. But at the end of the day, it comes down to the schedule to me, and putting yourself and having venues where you can put on a good, entertaining product. And that is weeding out racetracks that don't do that. And that is where we are at now. That is my interpretation of the numbers.
I think that's fair. But I mean, for all the talk that we see on Twitter, and I'm among this, and obviously I don't like the philosophy behind the core package, but like Steve Phelps had his State of the Sport press conference, right? And his reaction to the 750, I asked about this exact question, 750 versus 550. Why are you sticking with the 550 philosophy and everything that goes into that with the next gen car, when there's clearly like a loud portion of fans who really don't like the entire idea and concept behind it? And he said that according to their surveys, it's a vocal minority. Now, I'm not sure that I agree with that. I think if I was just to do a poll and say straight up, like, do you like the 550 package? Yes or no. I think it would be majority no, personally. But again, if you're voting on individual races compared to those, you know, and we're talking places like Texas, Kansas, even Homestead, stuff like that, at Vegas versus how they were before, how they were perceived before, these numbers with this package are getting slightly higher number. Now, you could, and I could argue this too, is it worth the trade-off to make so many fans and drivers and everything angry that it's sort of foot to the floor kind of racing? I mean, that's a whole different debate. But if you're NASCAR and you're looking at these, in some ways, you know, it's probably a win in some ways because you're like, hey, look, we made this number go up, and we sort of, and combined with the schedule change, like you said, which is a very good point. I think they've eliminated a lot of stinker races. Let's quickly go to the worst 10 races of the season, which you have in front of you. And then I have some other information too on that. So this year, and I haven't even gone through this yet, but I think it's going to prove my example of this is in terms of bringing up the bad races. So this season overall, there were only three races under 50%. That was the Coke 600, 48.5. The Texas race, the playoff race, obviously the All-Star doesn't count there, 45.8. And the real stinker of the year as voted on by the fans, I think that was some 550 package fatigue at that point. That was 23.4. Okay. So that's the worst race of the year. I don't know if I agree that was the worst. I would think Coke 600 might have been the worst race of the year, personally. You have any thoughts on that real quick before we move on to continue this point?
To me, the second Las Vegas race is worse than the Coke 600 because of the stakes and what you're coming off of. It's the playoffs. You're coming off an incredible race at Bristol. We had the Chase Elliott, Kevin Harvick thing, you know, the great battle. It's short track racing, and you're going all from that intensity and guys, you know, wanting to fight each other and angry, and you're going to a race at Las Vegas where there just was none of that intensity, and the drama was just it was like putting a pin in a balloon, and it just like poof. And I was like, oh, this is not what I want of the playoffs. This is not what the playoffs are supposed to be. So that to me is why Las Vegas is higher than the 600. Honestly, I came to terms with the 600 a long time ago. It is what it is. It hasn't been a good race for a long time. It's much too long. I get why 600 miles matter and you're never going to change that. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. To me, when it comes to playoff, I want a certain caliber of race. I want a certain level of intensity. And you didn't get that at Vegas.
Okay. I stalled a little bit here to pull up these numbers. Like I was saying, so there was only three races below 50% this year. Last year, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 races below 50%. 2019, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 races below 50%. And to make matters even worse, 4 races below 30% in 2019. Some real, real, real bad races that year. 2018, another bunch more. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 races below 50%. 2017, again, another pattern. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8. Yeah, so about another 8. So it goes on and on. So out of all the years that this poll has been around, for whatever reason, this year did not have a lot of like truly bad races where you're just like, man, this race, this sucks. You know what I'm saying? And again, I think that the 550 package probably helps eliminate some of those reasons, because let me go back to 2019, where I'm looking at this here. So we've got some of the bad races were Homestead 2019, 30%, Texas 45%, Fontana 37%, Pocono, well, Phoenix was the worst race that year because it was the 550 package on a short track, essentially, that penultimate race that made them change package. But the point is that, okay, here's another example. The bottom six races of 2018. I wish I could show you this as I'm doing the podcast. Probably not good podcast listening, but the bottom six races of 2018 were all either 2 mile or intermediate track races, right? And I think that means something. And I don't want to sit here and defend the package, because the bottom five races of this year were also all intermediate, but they're not as bad as they were. Does that make sense?
It does. But, and I look at what I say about the schedule, and to me, I look at these 10 races that are on here. You've got six races on mile and a half racetracks. That to me says that's the problem. That has long been the problem. It continues to be a problem. It's gotten better, but more work needs to be done. Also on the list, you've got two Richmond races. We have long talked about Richmond has been an issue where, for whatever reason, it is technically a short track, NASCAR has not been able to figure out a package or a tire combination or tracks or, you know, all sorts of reasons that racing has just not been good there. And then you've got Daytona 500, which was bogged down by rain. And then after the long delay, the racing was just so-so. It was kind of tepid. But again, I think there's other factors in play. And then you got Circuit of Americas, which was just a complete, you know, rainstorm. And there's a lot going on there. And people, there's a lot of anticipation going into that race. And people weren't fulfilled because you didn't get quality racing that you want to see. Plus, it was rain shortened. So I look at this and I say NASCAR's made strides with way it's going in the progress. And you can talk about the packages, but at the end of the day, it's about the schedule.
I agree. So what Jordan's referring to there is the worst 10 races. And I know we're jumping around here, and I wish I had like a PowerPoint for you guys.
Yeah, you should do like a PowerPoint presentation. You'd be like Professor Jeff.
Follow along here as
you get your little pointer, and get your little nice little hat.
Sorry if this is confusing to listen to, and I'm just like reading off these numbers, and I'm sure you're driving in your car and you're being like, what? I'm so lost. But so with these bottom 10 races, let me just read them in order from worst, the worst one down to list the bottom 10. Jordan referred to most of them already, but Las Vegas 2, Texas playoff race, Coke 600, Atlanta 1, All-Star race, Richmond 1, COTA, Kansas playoff race, Richmond 2, and Daytona 500. To me, is surprising to see Daytona 500 on the list in the bottom 10. Like you said, it was rain affected. Ended up being late, and then there was big wrecks, obviously, that left McDowell as one of the survivors to win that race. But Richmond, you know, both Richmond races, hard to argue with them being on there. COTA, I mean, that race was a total crap show. I mean, that was not a good show at all. I mean, and it was rain shortened in the end. That wasn't satisfying for anybody. Vegas, obviously, for the reasons we talked about, sucked. Texas playoff race. I mean, both Texas races, if you include All-Star, are in the bottom five. Zero surprise. Coke 600, I already talked about that. Atlanta would have easily been lower than it was, 50.6, but Blaney tracked down Larson at the very, very end of a 500-mile race, and that sort of made it exciting or redeemed it at least a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, all these races, I mean, yeah, they belong on there. So, and as we were talking about, to segue from our last segment, many intermediate tracks. But, again, I don't want to be in the position of defending the –
Why, Jeff? It's okay. Package. Open your heart to the package.
I did, and then it burned me. I tried. Like you said, I gave it. I came in with an open mind, and I gave it several years. I tried to be an open-minded about it, and I'm just kind of out on it. Like, I just, the philosophy of it is what turns me off about it, and I want to see the racing put more back in the driver's hands than mashing the gas and just trying to draft off each other, which is a different kind of skill, but, you know. Anyway, we've talked about that a lot. The top 10 race of this year, Bristol night race, number one, not only number one for this year, but number one all time in the poll, 95.7%. Still unbelievable that you can get over 95% of people on Twitter to agree on any one thing. I think that's fairly stunning and shows you how good that race was. Mm-hmm. Not only a good race, but then obviously all the Elliott Harvick stuff after made that extremely compelling. And you were right in the middle of that, obviously. Hey, Jordan, do you want to play us the audio yet?
No, Jeff, I am not going to play the audio. And no one has seen the audio, just FYI. Even you haven't seen the audio.
That's true. Anyway, Martinsville playoff race, 92.7. That was obviously another epic one there. With all the Hamlin and Bowman stuff at the end, Bowman ends up winning that. Mm-hmm. Darlington playoff race. Darlington just seems to keep delivering.
Great tire wear. And you talk about putting in driver's hands. In Atlanta, I think that's the second Atlanta race too, which didn't make that list, by the way, the top 10, which is really surprising because that was terrific. But it's a racetrack. Tire wear, it's about drivers having to put kind of test themselves and ability to save their cars and equipment over long runs. And it's a great indicative of what stock car racing should be on a big track.
Yeah. So it's interesting because up until the playoffs, for most of the year, because the number four race, it's a tie. So 88.5 for both Vegas and Martinsville. Vegas won and Martinsville won. So the Vegas Martinsville, that was April, May. So we went from May until September with those two races being the best of the year. And there wasn't like another great, like truly great race in that, in the meantime. We, both you and I argued for New Hampshire at one point. We thought that was going to be better than it was, but, and that made the top 10 list. That came in seventh or eighth, but eighth. But, you know, that the way that race started with the rain, marring the start of that one and NASCAR not calling the caution or starting the race when it was wet, you know, that didn't work out. You know, I'm sure that that took a notch off that. But so Bristol, Martinsville, Darlington, Las Vegas won, Martinsville won, the Roval. Roval seems to keep appearing on this chart over and over again. Daytona 2, that was a great race. The cutoff regular season finale.
Another second year in a row. Fantastic race.
Yep.
Love it as a cutoff.
Definitely belongs in that spot. And then New Hampshire, as we talked about with that Almirola win. The first Talladega race that was won by Keselowski. And then the clash on the road course, which I remember like nothing about that, honestly.
That was the one that jumped out to me in this list was, it was fine. It wasn't extraordinary by any means. It was an interesting finish. You had Chase Elliott and Ryan Blaney, good friends, you know, contact on the last lap going through the chicane, going the checkered flag. And like, okay, but there was no hard feelings. They both kind of just shrugged it off. I looked at that and I'm like, if I was going to take away a race, it's that race. I've easily thrown in the second Atlanta race in there. One of the two Pocono races, by the way, were both better, I thought, than the clash, which I don't know if that's just people being excited that NASCAR's back and it's, you know, this, oh, they're going to race on the road course, not the oval this year for it. That's the only thing I can think of. And you got the last lap drama there, but it's just, that was a race. I just like, yeah, it was fine. Don't get me wrong. Just wasn't top 10 worthy.
Well, you mentioned the Pocono races. They barely missed. I mean, Pocono won where Larson almost won the race. Then Bowman ended up winning it. That was the 11th race, 11th best race. And Pocono 2 was number 13. So, I mean, for Pocono standards, that's pretty strong. You know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't necessarily expect that. And I'm sure that helped boost boost Pocono's overall. You know, actually, Ron H. as well broke down by track, if you want to hear about that. So this is a little bit hard, Jordan, to go through because the races have sort of changed and it's not consistent data. Like for instance, Darlington 2, he has separated from Darlington 1. Like it's not just all Darlington. Mm-hmm. Like he has Bristol Night Race separated from Bristol 1, and like Bristol 1 doesn't exist right now. So like it's a little bit hard to explain this, but as far as multiple years, let's say 3 or more years of having a race at that track, do you want to guess the number one most consistently voted highest race? Do you want to guess?
I would say Bristol Spring Race.
It is actually the Roval.
Roval. Okay. Makes sense.
Yep. Roval's gone in its short history. The Roval's gone 93, 87, 83.6, 87.7. So it's a very high average. But right below that are the two Bristol races.
Yeah.
So,
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, it those at the Roval and the Bristol, you get intensity, you get wackiness, you get unpredictability. That's what people want. And then you factor in the fact that the Roval is a playoff race, a cutoff playoff race on top of that. That only heightens the drama. Makes sense to me why people have responded. The interesting thing I had to that is drivers have seemed to kind of push back on that race a lot. You've heard a few times this year, drivers call it a race in a parking lot. which I understand their frustration, but again, if I'm looking at these numbers, I'm saying, I'm sorry, this is obviously resonating with people and we're going to continue to do this. This is much better than being on the oval.
Well, I mean, certainly much better than being on the oval. And also when you have, Elliott and Harvick getting into it.
Yeah. But even that, I mean, before that though, I mean, you know, 2018, I mean, you had the you know, Brad Keselowski, you know, leading everyone off into turn one into the wall. And then one year you've got the next year in 2019, you've got Bubba Wallace and Alex Bowman and Elliott coming back after bouncing off the wall and rallying. It's just
Elliott going into it and then coming back to win. Right.
Yeah.
But don't forget the the Jimmy Truex spin there, you know, you know, coming to the line where Blaney wins it.
You get drama at that race.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, you can say it's manufactured or whatever, but I mean, at the end of the day, this is what people want. They want to be entertained. And I do think that the Roval does challenge drivers. We just talked about how we want to see drivers the best of their abilities. Well, this is a racetrack that pushes drivers, and the best drivers, Kyle Larson this year, who won the championship, Chase Elliott, who won the championship last year. You know, these guys thrive in these situations, and these are the best drivers in NASCAR right now.
So, 20, I'm counting something. So, okay.
Oh boy. This is good stuff. This is riveting, Jeff. You really should have done this. We should have done like this as a video podcast, and you could have like done a little PowerPoint presentation.
So, as I mentioned, right, Ron H on his website, he's broken this down by race itself, not just by track, but like, again, Bristol 1, Bristol 2, Darlington 2. So it expands, you know, the amount of races. You know, it's probably like 40 or something here now instead of just 20 or whatever, right? So if you take that into account, the first mile and a half track on here is ranked 21st. The number one mile and a half track, which is race, which is Kansas 1, ranked above Homestead somehow.
I don't get that, but okay.
Yeah, Kansas 1 has a higher average rating than Homestead. And but you have to scroll all the way down to 21st to get to a mile and a half track. So to your point about the track makeup playing so much into it, it's hard, no matter what package it is, it's hard to make these races compelling.
Yeah.
If it's on a mile and a half track, it's just, I mean, even Homestead has had some stinkers. And in fact, you know, even when Homestead was a championship race, I'm looking at these numbers here. You know, you had a 68.5, a 30%, which was honestly that Kyle Busch Homestead championship race in 2019. That was a pretty bad race.
It wasn't good. Really, I think there was like one natural caution in that race, if that.
And yeah, it wasn't good.
It was not good. And if Martin Truex Jr. doesn't have a pit stop, that still baffles me to this day, where they put the wrong tires on the side of the car.
And Hamlin with his giant piece of tape.
Yeah, it was just that was a race that Truex was probably going to win going away, and it just, we never got that caution at the end that you were all looking for.
Yeah. So I mean, as much as we all love Homestead, which I do.
Sure.
Anyway.
No, I think to your point though, I mean, you talk a lot about NASCAR's reshaped the schedule, and what are the two types of tracks that they're looking to add? One is short tracks, and the second is road courses. Why is that? Because those consistently put on the best races. You look at the 10 races that were voted the 10 best races this year, 3 on short tracks, 2 on road courses, 2 on super speedways. That's not a coincidence. And that just emphasizes why NASCAR is making this change. And people can criticize it all you want to, but when you look at the numbers, it backs up their path and their thinking. It makes sense.
So before we move on to F1, I do want to say that we're going to need some of your help coming up on the podcast. And we want to do, just as we did last year, Jordan, we want to answer some of your questions. I don't want to put this call out on Twitter. You know what I mean? Like, because then it'll just open it up to everyone. I want it to be our actual listeners who are listening to the show and get their questions answered. I don't just want some random person that doesn't even listen to the podcast to have it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you just don't like people. I get it.
No, I just want it to be authentic, you know, like we're actually talking to you guys, the listeners, not just some anonymous person on Twitter. So anyway, I'll give you my email address here. It is jgluck, JGLUCK, @theathletic.com. I don't know if we're going to do the mailbag next week or the week after or whatever, answer your questions. We have a couple more ideas for off-season podcasts, but we definitely want to do one episode where we devote it all to that. So if you have questions for us that you'd want to hear us address here on the podcast, shoot me an email. Again, jgluck@theathletic.com, and I will save your questions and we'll pick the best of those that come in, or at least the ones we feel like answering, and avoid the ones.
I can't wait for these. How many of these are going to be? Can you show the video? What did Harvick say to you?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Maybe we'll, you'll be compelled to answer that then.
No.
So please help us out with that for an upcoming episode, probably in the next week or two. And yeah, so Jordan, now we're going to talk about Formula One. Does that sound good?
Awesome. Love the race. Love the weekend. A lot of fun. A lot to talk about. Let's do it.
So this is sort of like a de facto post-race podcast for Formula One. That race was this morning, Sunday morning. Well, I guess not this morning, afternoon, depending on what time zone you're in. but man, I tell you what, you go into this weekend and you go into Saturday's sprint race after Lewis Hamilton looks like he's going to win the pole for the sprint race. And they found, you know, something going on with his DRS. The gap was too big. Inspector Max was inspecting the wing, got himself fined 50,000 euros for that, by the way. But they said, Mercedes, no, you're cheating. And I guess ultimately, you know, if you read the stewards report, you know, they kind of come down on the side of, it wasn't really blatant. It was, you know, it was out of the specs, I guess, but you know, they made it out deliberate. Like it wasn't deliberate, you know, whether you believe that or not, it was so small. The margin was so small. I don't know, but it was not approved, whatever the gap in between the wings there that would open. So Lewis Hamilton DQ'd from qualifying. That means he has to start the sprint race 20th. Plus he was taking a 5-position grid penalty for taking a new power unit. So no matter what he did, he was going to have to start 5 back. So unbelievable drive on Saturday. Drives from 20th to 5th in a 24-lap sprint race. What the heck? Like, that's amazing. And then gets the 5-position grid penalty. So has to start 10th for the Grand Prix today, Sunday, as we're talking. And then wins it. And then he wins it. So essentially, as he said on the radio, he basically had a 25-position penalty overall this weekend, and he overcame it. I mean, what a drive. I mean, just when Red Bull thought they had Mercedes on the ropes, and this is the weekend where Max really pulls ahead and really maybe puts the dagger through the heart of Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton and says, this is, with 3 races to go, this is ours. Lewis comes back and wins it. Wow, what a statement.
Big statement. And I agree with everything you said there. One, this stretch of races, starting at Austin, then going to Mexico City, then going to Brazil, really favored Red Bull. And this was the opportunity for them to grab the championship. And we saw Max do that at Austin, built his point lead up. And it felt like, especially with everything going on with Hamilton and Mercedes this weekend, Red Bull had an opportunity to score a bunch of points. You add in the sprint race where there's more points available. And it was like, okay, this is Max's opportunity. And now he's going to put Hamilton on the back foot. And now Hamilton is going to need something to happen to Verstappen in the next few races. He's going to need some luck going in his favor. Otherwise, his championship's over. And instead, and I think this is interesting, this was a sprint race weekend. Without that sprint race, Hamilton doesn't win today. Because, and I don't think
that wouldn't have been able to overcome 20th.
That would have been, I mean, I'm not going to say impossible, but I mean, unlikely, very unlikely.
He honestly would have been lucky to get up to 5th. He would have gotten in the points.
Probably. Yeah, he would have got points, but he wouldn't have won. Certainly wouldn't have won. It'd been tough. So it worked in his favor that he was able to have that penalty on Saturday for the sprint race and then charge back up and finish 5th. And then he only dropped back to 10th. Saved his spot. Really, I mean, honestly, potentially, if you're looking at this and Hamilton goes on and wins a record 8th championship, we're going to go look back on this weekend as when the championship was won and that there was a sprint race. Because without that, we're having a different conversation today. But kudos to Hamilton. The drive that he put on, it showcased everything about him. Patience, his willingness to set guys up and make passes on a level that other people aren't. And I don't care the garbage that people say about, oh, he's in the best car, he's got the fastest car. Great. It doesn't matter. You still have to go out and do that. Look at Bottas and what Bottas does in the same equipment. And it's not even close.
Hamilton. Nice start for Bottas.
Second week in a row, by the way. Second race in a row.
Hamilton's just got to be back there going, oh my God, you can't even hold him off for a corner. Just try to jam him up so I can catch up, please.
Oh my God. And Hamilton got criticized last week for criticizing Bottas. And it's like, no, Hamilton's right. Like, you go back to Mexico and I didn't get a chance to watch it because we were in Phoenix and I had to go back and watch it. But that was a horrible start by Bottas where he literally opened the door for Max to come through. And it's like, you had one job. You had one job. Just hold him up and let Hamilton take the corner. and you can't even do that. And then today, again, he got beat. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, this goes back to the conversation we had earlier this year. We're like, if you're trying to win a world championship in the drivers and manufacturer side, you need both of your drivers operating at a high level. And Bottas is not that capable. This is beyond him, his ability. But it just shows.
I like that moment, Jordan, where Hamilton comes on the radio and says, after he had pulled over for him, and he says, tell him to follow me or tell him to follow me through or whatever. Yeah, right. Like, he's going to be able to keep pace. I mean,
no.
He eventually got third, which is good for him. I think that was helped by pit strategy. I mean, there was a virtual safety car and he pitted right then. So he hopped over Perez and was able to hold that position. But I don't know. I mean, there's a reason he's getting replaced. No offense, but
it's going to be interesting to see what George Russell can do next year. And that'll be a better indicative of what a teammate should be in these kind of situations. But Hamilton was flawless this weekend. In a weekend he had to be. He didn't lose points. He picked up some points. Now they're going to a three-race stretch where he and Mercedes should have the advantage. This was a big, big weekend. And I don't know how you can't watch this weekend and not be impressed with Hamilton and how he executed in a situation where a lot of drivers would have crumbled, or they would have tried to do too much and overcompensating and put themselves in a position where they make a mistake. And then it just snowballs from there. Hamilton didn't do that all weekend. He just was patient, kept his wits about him, and just picked guys off one at a time. A brilliant, brilliant win.
Well, I mean, obviously, I mean, they're so fast on the straightaways, and
sure.
I don't know enough about these next two, circuits that are coming up. And I guess F1's never raced on them at all. So Qatar and Saudi Arabia are the next two. Obviously, we've seen Abu Dhabi, and they've even redone Abu Dhabi a little bit to try to make for more opportunities to pass, I guess. But from what the commentators keep saying on the Sky F1 coverage and stuff, that like Qatar and Saudi Arabia both favor like sort of that high power straight line speed, which is what Mercedes, clearly, what a great decision to take a new power unit. It seems to be paying off.
Well,
I mean, geez, like that thing is fast. So if that's the difference,
the rest of the year, then where they don't have to take any more penalties. So.
Yes. And I mean, to have the gap 14 points now with three potential races that should favor them. I mean, it's going to be close. Even if Max is doing the damage limitation or whatever they're calling it over there. But by the way, we need to talk about this non-call. I agreed with the non-call, but I saw a lot of people on Twitter not agreeing with it. And the funniest part was that after Christian Horner got on the radio to race control and was like, let them race. Did you see what was trending on Twitter?
Yeah.
Karen Horner. People started calling him a Karen for hopping on there. And, you know, because they said, well, you know, Silverstone or whatever, you know, oh, Lewis is driving recklessly. He has to be, you know, punished, all this stuff. And then Max practically drives Lewis off the track, which I thought, you know, it was borderline, you know, yeah. I don't want to see it over officiated. So that's why I was fine with it not being a penalty, but they all started calling him a Karen Horner was trending on Twitter. I was just like, wow, that is something. But I don't know. I get that. Yeah, I guess I'm so skewed by a NASCAR perspective, Jordan, but I just don't want to see every time somebody has sort of like a racy moment or a block or whatever, like you're going to penalize that like every single time. Like, no, like I was glad that they let that go. Honestly,
I agree 100% with everything you say. I don't want officials to interject themselves into something that doesn't need it. And this didn't need it. This was hard racing. This is a guy who, two guys fighting for a race win, fighting for a world championship, or going at it. You want those moments. That's what racing is about. And if you start over officiating it and interjecting yourself and penalizing guys for every little mistake they do or for every little move they do, you're going to lose the essence of what makes racing great. I'm glad they stayed out of it. The only thing is just continue this way. Don't over officiate. Don't interject yourself and step back. And that I'm glad to see it. I don't want that. And you got to go back to the sports car race, the IMSA race Saturday, the 10-hour race at Road Atlanta. You know, the officials stayed out of it at the end there, and they didn't let the two cars in the DP class going for the win. One of them went off track. One of them looked like he kind of came over and, you know, cut the other off. they didn't put themselves in that situation and have to make a call. They just said, okay, that's racing. And obviously if it's egregious, then something needs to be called. But in these moments, no harm, no foul. That's what you want to see in racing. I'm glad that is the case. Hopefully this is the standard going forward.
I mean, Max is very aggressive though. Let's not,
they're both aggressive. You know,
kid ourselves. Yeah, sure. Sure. But I mean, Max is, I feel like he's willing to put his car in situation. I mean, he's willing to be like, wreck me. I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, and obviously that's, they both collided, but you know, on based on neither of them giving an inch, at times this year, but I don't know. I just think it, you know, you have to race it out. And it was sort of a ball don't lie moment anyway. Like Hamilton passed him and won anyway. And you got that great moment from Toto Wolff. That's now like a meme of him like pointing right at the camera being like, gotcha, kind of thing.
I love the rivalry between Toto and Christian. It's so good. And it's so natural. It isn't like they play it up. Like there is just a level of animosity among them, between them. This is not fake. Like they genuinely hate each other. Not hate, but they dislike each other and they love to needle one another. And it's so fun to watch.
Yeah. Well, you know, F1 or the FIA, I guess, you know, it's, they've just got to make sure that they don't lean one way too far, because it did. I'm not going to say they were picking on Mercedes this weekend, but Mercedes was getting like a lot on them. And then even like the seatbelt thing at the end, did you see that?
Yeah, I saw it. Oh yeah, I saw it.
I mean,
it's a little nitpicky.
Come on, guys. Like, yeah. You know, we're just talking about over officiating and, you know, to not, I don't know. Yeah. Hamilton only got a 5,000 euro fine for undoing his seatbelt.
Oh no, the horror.
I mean, come on. Like,
I love the fact though. And it's like Mercedes is really leaning into it though. And Toto's leaning into it. You know, he said F them on Saturday after Hamilton finished fifth. It's like, they're like, screw it. It's like kind of the us against the world mentality. It's like, it's
well, then they obviously wanted to, Verstappen penalty. I mean, Toto said afterwards that to not penalize Verstappen was laughable. So I mean, it's just going to keep going like this.
Love it.
Just going to keep
so
going.
Good. Three races left. Two teams that don't like each other. Two drivers who are super aggressive and are at the top of their game. Sign me up for it. This is so good.
Do you think it's too late for us to stash away in Kyle Larson's luggage? You know, Kyle Larson broke that news on last week's teardown that he was going to. Going to Abu Dhabi, and he didn't say we couldn't come with him. So
he likes you better than he likes me, so you could probably do it.
Why do you say that? That's not true.
You got a better relationship with him. I do. I don't know.
No, he doesn't. I don't think he plays favorites.
You just have a better rapport than with him than I do.
Probably because I've been to some dirt races.
I was gonna say it's definitely that connection.
Anyway,
I'm looking for flights right now to Abu Dhabi and see if we can swing it.
No, Dubai is an easier flight. Like I said, I went there for my honeymoon.
Okay.
6 years ago. So Dubai is the better flight.
I don't fly overseas.
And then you know what, Jordan, as I did 6 years ago, you can actually take a bus very cheap, public transportation. You can go from Dubai to Abu Dhabi. It's like a quick day trip. It's like an hour and a half or something. Quick ride.
You should book this. Why don't you go?
Well, the Dubai flight is a little bit of a hold up there, Jordan.
How much do you think
a little bit expensive? I think I had to save for like 3 years to get enough miles to fly to Dubai on that one. So,
okay.
And you have to connect through, I had to connect through Amman, Jordan. You know, it's a whole thing. It's, you know, the F1 travel is not so easy there, my friend. So I'll fly to Nashville.
What's the race over there, by the way? I'm looking right now for flights.
Oh, you are? Oh, yeah. Okay. All right, Jordan's going to go, everybody.
I'm not going. I'm looking for you. I'm not going. I'm definitely afraid of flying. So we're pushing you.
Well, how are you going to get to Abu Dhabi and all these Saudi Arabia races and stuff?
No, this is your thing. You go cover Formula One. I'll handle the NASCAR stuff over here.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate that.
You're the jet. Anyway, you love going to these places.
I do. It's, who wouldn't want to travel the world? It's amazing.
Me, I hate flying.
Just take a Xanax or whatever that people take. I don't know what do people take who are afraid of flying?
They have like pills for that or something.
Alcohol. Oh, okay.
Lots of alcohol.
Yeah. Okay. Ben Rhodes over here, everybody, flying to Abu Dhabi.
Oh yeah. I mean, I can tell you a story when I flew to Hawaii, which was an 8-hour flight from Minneapolis, and I was passed out within an hour because I drank so much, because I just hate flying. I'm so scared of flying, especially overseas, especially over large bodies of water, and over like 2 hours, I'm just a mess.
Okay. I think you watched too much Castaway or something, or too much Lost or something. Anyway, well, while you look for flights, any final thoughts on anything that you want to talk about this week?
No, I'm excited. I don't know if excited is the right word, but I mentioned at the top of the podcast, we've got the test this week. It should be entertaining, and it's going to be curious to see how that unfolds, just because of really this next-gen car is still so unknown, and there's so many variables involved, and especially on an oval. So I'm very curious to see what this is going to be like these next 2 days at Charlotte Motor Speedway. By the way, it looks like I can get a flight for under $2,000. So really not bad, Jeff.
Yeah. Good luck with your middle seat coach for like a 16-hour flight or whatever.
All right.
That doesn't sound too fun.
So I shouldn't fly economy, is what you're saying?
I mean, that's a long flight, buddy.
Let's see if I can bump with business. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that jumps up when you want to fly business. We're talking like $8,000. Okay. I'm going to let you talk to the bosses about this because I don't think they're going to sign off.
All right. Well, we just need Max and Lewis to keep it close, and then we'll just see what we can do. Yeah. Anyway, everybody, look, we feel like we tried our best with the NASCAR coverage this year, and obviously we're still trying. Jordan just tagged along to Brad Keselowski's first day at work there at Roush Fenway Racing and wrote about that. And we're obviously going to try to keep the content rolling. So, and of course, there's all the stuff you can go back and read. Like I had a Mike Helton story, Noah Gregson story that I was proud of, things like that.
I don't think anybody did a better job this year writing bigger, long form features than you did. The stuff you wrote this year was just brilliant.
Oh gosh, I would not go that far.
I would absolutely go that far. The stuff you wrote, like four or five big stories this year that just blow everybody else out of the water.
Oh gosh, no, we're just getting crazy here.
No, I'm not.
I think you might be into the sauce already. I appreciate the kind words, but listen, whether it was good or not, if you want to subscribe, please go to theathletic.com/theteardown. That's where you can find the latest deal. But in the meantime, we appreciate you listening. We were just looking at our podcast numbers, and our championship edition was our number one episode ever. It passed the Jordan Bianchi Bristol Spotlight episode that I thought would not be topped for a while. So, man, it's so cool that you guys are embracing this and listening to this podcast. I don't know if you'll keep listening to it in the off season, but we'll keep doing them for at least a few weeks. And anyway, thanks everybody for listening.
Appreciate it.
Talk to you next time on The Teardown.